Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast. In this episode, I speak to Replex, a startup I encountered here in Berlin, who promised to help you optimize your server infrastructure by analyzing at every level about where you could utilize the CPU better, the memory better, etc., etc. This was recorded in a slightly echoey room with a new microphone, and I got something I have not had in a very, very long time, which was mobile phone interference. So sorry about that. It is a little noisy, but I hope you enjoy nonetheless.
My name is Patrick. We refer to each other as P1 and P2. So I'm largely responsible for sales and marketing at Replex. And especially, you know, focus on looking at especially more of the data center world in Europe, but as well cloud, emerging technologies, some of the more new cool stuff that's coming up. And I'm sure Tina can tell you a little bit more about that.
So you're not Patrick.
I'm not Patrick, no. I'm Tino. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Replex. And I've been working with Patrick together for the past 12 years, I think. Yeah. We've been always working in the IT infrastructure business, doing several stuff, and that's where we identified several issues or problems, which we see as one big problem that we are trying to solve and replace.
And I encountered you a couple of weeks ago, just before Christmas, at a pitch session where Patrick, too,
that's right.
you made the claim that you help DevOps developers, infrastructure people, identify inefficiencies in their setup at various levels in the stack, which was an interesting proposition. So I was interested in finding out some more. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe go into a bit more detail about what the platform is and what it can help people solve.
So I think in the last years, the complexity of IT infrastructure increased a lot. So there are a lot of technologies running on top of each other in the infrastructure stack. And also horizontally, you see a lot of technology islands in big enterprise or companies. And what we do is that we connect all those layers. We pull information out of every single layer. We take topology information about how the infrastructure is structured, and also usage data, historical usage data, like load CPU or load RAM disk storage information, and then we correlate that across all layers. So one use case, for example, is that if you run a very modern Kubernetes or setup, and you have tons of AWS instances running below that, we can help you to get visibility again on how much each single cluster costs, and also allocates and resources on the underlying AWS infrastructure. That's something where visibility gets lost because the technologies run on top of each other, and there's nothing yet besides Replex that connects this data.
And I suppose this is you make an interesting point that something like Kubernetes has become very popular, but there's multiple layers in there. I mean, Kubernetes is usually managing something else, and then that something else has something else running inside of it, and in some respects, you know, computer hardware is powerful, and we've sort of thought we can just forget about and not worry too much about these multiple layers, but they are all adding their own overhead and need to be finely tuned themselves. And it's actually interesting you mentioned the whole tie into the cost as well. It's like 30% or whatever the number you quoted is a number, but if you see it in a dollar or euro value, it has a whole other kind of value. So, I mean, without giving away your magic, I guess actually firstly, let's just, what's the various layers that you can you monitor?
That's basically all the different types of IT infrastructure. So when we are talking about the layers, we actually mean the assets of the inventory, which are physical machines in the different data centers. It's the different virtualization technologies, so all virtual machines. We mean the multiple cloud providers, we mean the private clouds, and we, of course, mean the modern stack with containers and the orchestrators. That's something we always we all see as different types of assets, and it's multiple technologies stacked on top of each other. And
is there an agent that just you have set up that is able to look down that entire stack, or do you have to install an agent at each particular point?
We typically just try to connect to the APIs of each layer. So, of course, nobody wants to install an agent. Mm. There are several cases where you might need an agent. For example, if it's only just an old legacy system and just a physical machine, no virtualization on it, then, of course, you need to somehow get to that information of the topology, and that's where we provide an open source agent, mm-hmm. which is basically only a small script getting the information and pushing it to our API.
And the information you need is mostly available at all of these layers? The providers are, well, especially the commercial providers have no issue with, I suppose they use it for their own billing and things like that anyway.
It's just the public available data, especially in the cloud. That's we need the instance types. From the instance types, we know how many virtual CPU cores you have, how much RAM you have, and how much storage you have. And that's the topology data that we collect and that we need.
I think taking it a little bit more high level, it's the general what Gartner would define as the AI ops approach. I think they changed it recently. It's now the algorithmic IT operations.
AI ops.
AI ops. Yeah, that's right. It's one of it's basically the follow-on of the ITOM kind of structure, and the idea behind that basically is saying that you have one central source of information that you use on a daily basis without having to focus on your 50 different tools that you normally use by connecting to those and then value adding to that information on top of that. So being able to gather a bunch of data basically from all types of different sources and then value adding to that data to make it understandable and actionable for you specifically. Mm. Not just generally, but specifically for you. And I think that's where Replex really comes into its own.
And my main sort of imagining of how this looks is the screenshots on your website. So I don't have tremendous amounts of idea how it might exactly look. So for example, here you have a screenshot saying, I don't know, you're using 62% RAM most of the time. So you probably don't need, you could probably have a little less RAM, maybe. Is that basically the extent of the information, or can you actually drill New Relic style, drill down into details of functions or particular aspects of the stack that are maybe using more resources than they should be, or not that they should be, but you can identify ones that are particularly heavy and power and intensive?
So you can start with a high-level overview, and then you can get across each layer and get very deep insight into each layer. And we spend a lot of time on visualizations and try to optimize the information and make it understandable. We have a very experienced UI UX designer who's spending a lot of time on data visualization. And especially in the container area, we have some very unique approaches on how to visualize things.
Yeah. And I guess, so you also mentioned you use historical data because, of course, something like a distributed system goes through spikes as well. It will have peaks and it'll then settle down a bit and have peaks every now and then. So can you define your own time frame, or do you have like a suggested time frame that you have worked out algorithmically? Or
so we need at least 1 month of usage data to give very good predictions on the future workload. And this data can be used then for capacity planning, for example. So you can see what we estimate or how your future workload looks like based on the historical data. And that helps companies that spend millions on AWS and have very large environments to have much better data for their capacity planning.
Okay. And is the platform live at the moment? Do you have people using it, or are you still sort of private betas? Or
no, it's live and GA. So customers are using it. We have several customers in different industry or verticals who are using it, and we see very interesting use cases, especially in larger corporations. Mm-hmm. That are all jumping on the train right now on container and Kubernetes, and they often are probably in really big strategic cloud migration projects, and they are very thankful for the data that we provide them. So we have a few customers in Germany, a few customers in the US, and what we see is that especially the customers in the US are working often much more intense on the container side than some European companies, but I think in the last 6 months there was also a lot of traction and the container space in Germany as well.
And what are the pieces of infrastructure that you support? You mentioned a couple, but in terms of in terms of cloud hosting, in terms of containers, in terms of container orchestrators, what are the ones you support?
So we are container orchestrators. We support Kubernetes and Mesos.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm still working on the integration of Mesos, Apache Mesos, on that. We support Docker containers, of course. We have connectors to AWS, Google Cloud, and Microsoft Azure.
Mm-hmm.
And we support KVM, SAN, and VMware as virtualization layer. So,
yeah. And do you go up to the application level, or you just stop at the...
We stop at the application level because yeah. I think that's where the APM tools come in,
yeah.
that have
yeah.
a very DW on the on the application level.
Yeah.
And so we just focus on the... on the infrastructure stack, which now is also software, but not the business application that's actually running on top of the infrastructure.
And you mentioned you're the only or one of the only companies doing this, but are there components of maybe open source tools or things that people might be using at the moment that you're looking to sort of consolidate? I guess if I wanted to, I could probably pull together a tool here and a tool here and a tool there and make my own dashboard if I wanted to. Are there some common tools you're trying to replace, or do you really see what you're doing as something very unique?
That's a good question. I think there are probably several tools around in the enterprise and open source world which we replace in the several layers of IT infrastructure or performance metrics. But I think as far as I have seen, no other tool that is really focused on being technology agnostic. That's what we are trying to be, and having an overview of all the different technologies with a special focus on the modern stack of containers and orchestrators, especially as this is still very new technology, not very highly adopted. So I think this definitely separates us from the different tools being focused on cloud migrations, on AWS cost optimization, Azure cost optimization, or whatever it is.
I think that's exactly what we're trying to break down, actually, because it's a very siloed focused approach right now. Right? Everybody has their own tools, and everybody uses what they like to use, and by all means, we don't want to get rid of them, actually. What we want to do is set a layer on top of that and say, well, instead of all 5, 6, 10, 20 teams using something different, using kind of separate KPIs and using different tools, and nobody really talks to each other with the same information base, is actually to say, well, you have now a layer on top of that that consolidates all of that information, and you can all work with that same, those same, I like to call them sources of truth, but I mean, that's like the American marketing talking, but I mean,
wow.
but I mean, you know what I mean? It's in
one
central place.
I think I just have a bit of skepticism about whether all these teams actually want to all use the same tool.
That's maybe because you think that we would be replacing something, but that's actually not true. So we're not replacing any existing solution in the teams. Also because we do not collect our own metrics, so we are connecting to existing metric sources in the different...
I'm talking more generally. I'm not saying you in particular, I'm just saying developers generally. But actually, something you said about technology agnostic was something I was wanting to ask a bit more. So in terms of setting up the tool in the first place, I kind of got an implication there that I don't have to say, oh, I'm using this orchestration tool on this host. I kind of just, I mean, how do I set this up? I'm kind of seeing like you made me think I could say, well, one day I'm running on Amazon, but I've moved my application next month to Azure, and the platform just notices that and carries on. I don't have to change anything. Is that?
That is basically correct. Okay. So we do need the API keys, read-only keys,
right, okay,
to the different providers of data so that we can connect to it. And we would, on a regular basis, which is coordinated like for 1 hour, depends on how you configure it, and then, yeah, see what
happens. Okay. So this is actually interesting. So in some respects, if I had like a multi-tenant cloud, I could,
yeah,
I could, in 1 week I'm running on one, and 1 week I'm running on another, and et cetera, et cetera.
That's especially
even,
what we mean.
Yeah, you could even say, well,
to the full IT stack,
yeah,
because companies are now having strategies to multi-cloud,
yeah,
are moving to multi-cloud strategies, and they need an insight into the various, yeah, stacks of cloud providers, mm, or infrastructure providers they are using.
And for some reason, your application seems to run better on Azure. You know, this is the kind of data you could, who knows why, but yeah. okay, cool. And I think I'm interested to actually to have a try. I mean, I don't know what I can necessarily application I can throw at it to try. But also, if I need to leave it running for a month, that's probably the more complex thing. I'm not entirely sure what I can create in an afternoon that I can just leave running for a month. But anyway, we'll try. So, do you have like a tutorial project that people could try, or is it?
No, not yet. We just have closed demos for customers or POCs that we want to. But maybe later this year.
Yeah, there was an Israeli company that did like a JVM sort of in-depth stack trace that would take you down almost to a line of code to identify a problem. Yeah. And they had to have a lot of like demo projects because people just couldn't really even know what they would get without just seeing it in operation. You know. Yeah. And what's the plan over the next 6 months or so?
All right. just to clarify, we are largely focused on more complex environments.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if there's five servers in a coffee room, that's not necessarily an application that we look at.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, if you know, you still want
servers where?
In a coffee room. That does still happen. But I mean, no, for us especially, we're more largely focused at, I'd say, the mid-market to higher enterprise kind of level. Especially the more complicated kind of, the better. But the plan for the next month is definitely to keep growing as we are. I mean, on, you know, my kind of sales side of things, definitely continue to expand and, you know, get new customers, also new interesting use cases are always great for us. Definitely some really cool customers coming on board with some really cool use cases, which is great for us, of course. And in terms of that, yeah, growing with people as well.
We're hiring, so.
Exactly, we are hiring.
But you don't have to go into details of the customer or what they were doing, but what's been the most kind of the most amazing sounds too? I mean, what's been the most. I'm going to use a very English phrase because it's the best I can think, but the most eye-opening, piece of information that a client found. Like, we never realized that it was running like that. You know, has it been anything so far?
I think it's probably showing the guys the really required or utilized resources versus the provisioned resources,
yeah.
Especially when going to the modern stack with the containers. And orchestrators where more and more the developers themselves define the resources instead of the IT guys or IT ops providing resources has a huge leverage now as they request resources on a very granular level, on the container level, and with orchestrators defining services with a huge amount of containers that can waste a lot of resources.
So are you saying that the orchestrators tend to be wasting resources or the people who implemented them tend to be wasting resources?
I think it's more the problem of the missing insight yet to first know how much you probably will need, but then you just request it and never look at it again.
Yeah.
And then that's something we can provide them.
Yeah.
Looking at existing applications in huge clusters and providing them the insight. Look, if you change a little configuration here, just resize this configuration, and which is valid for hundreds of containers, you can save up to, I don't know, six figures on AWS.
Yeah. It's actually interesting because this is often, especially the individual developer these days, has a tendency to say, you know, compute power storage is cheap. Yeah. Just keep chucking more, it doesn't matter, you know, just keep going. And that individual developer maybe spends an amount that doesn't seem like that much, but I actually have a friend who's an engineering manager at Zalando, and on his team alone, which is just one team, he said, I think their AWS bill is like $500,000 a month. It's like, you know,
I would like to meet him actually.
So one thing that was very eye-opening for us as well as for the customer was that there's not only a technical factor in optimizing that, also a social factor within the team. So we provided them with data that they could use for like a high score, and they had 5 Scrum teams deploying software on their own on the container orchestrator. And with this high score, they were running to the guys who were actually configuring the container size and defining how much resources they need, and try to motivate them to run everything more efficiently, and gave them like a prize for the most efficient team gets like a free company dinner.
Yep.
And that was a huge impact without automatically optimizing anything.
Yeah.
So that was so it was the insight that we provided them with that helped them to optimize it internally without automatically optimizing it. So that was something we didn't see before, and which was very efficient also. And so we integrated it as a feature and also pitched that to other
gamification. But it's actually interesting because you say, you know, so someone's bill is $500,000 a quarter or whatever, which is just a reasonable amount of money, and you save them 30%. That also means that the cloud company has lost 30%. Do you foresee a problem where some of these, you know, I don't know, you become sufficiently popular and make sufficient enough impact that some of these cloud providers say, well, hang on a minute, we're not very happy with what you're doing here, you're losing us money.
No, the cloud providers are really happy because the overall cloud adoption is much higher if the customers are satisfied and they know that they are running the infrastructure more efficiently and cheaper than traditional data centers. So everything that we provide them with that helps them to run more cost effective is also supported by the big cloud providers. So there are no doubts they want to make the customer successful.
Absolutely. And I think because migration scenarios are something that we see more and more upcoming as well within our customers, they're quite happy that we facilitate that in the first place. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily, or they might decide not to go to the cloud if they, you know, just replicate their data, what they're doing in the data center, one-to-one, do the lift and shift approach to the cloud, and then they go, oh, this is expensive.
So two questions that came to mind, and they're almost completely opposite to each other.
Okay.
Just firstly, going back to your 5 servers in a coffee room, so you can also run the agent on your own machine as well.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then the other question was, which is a complete opposite, is does the service also work with things like lambdas and spot instances and the kind of the compute services that come and go? Or does it have to be on something that's more long running?
So it depends. So for spot instances, definitely.
Yeah.
But for lambda, not yet. So depends then on what kind of service you're running there on top of the existing cloud infrastructure.
Yeah.
We don't support Lambda or functions as a service yet because it's not a real infrastructure asset anymore.
No, it's fair enough. And you're probably getting very direct feedback on how efficient it is anyway, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, and also the enterprise adoption is not high at all.
No, okay. Yeah, I know it's still pretty new. I think there's certain communities that love it, but yeah. So, I mean, if you're aiming very strongly at enterprise, what are some of the problems you've had so far? Just convincing people it's worthwhile, or other problems that you haven't foreseen? Security, privacy issues, I'm not sure, any kind of issues you've come into?
So luckily for us, IT infrastructure generally right now is a very hot topic.
Yeah.
So generally, even in higher levels, when we're looking at kind of C-level, C-1, C-2, C-3, whatever, how far down, everyone seems to know kind of the basics or generally knows how to talk about it. So it's been great for us generally to talk to people. Some of the issues, I mean, okay, sales cycles generally in enterprises are just long. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I mean, there hasn't been too many crazy challenges, especially on the security side, which Germany is always known for. We haven't had many problems because you can deploy on premise if you want.
Yeah.
So there's usually no issue with that. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of any direct challenge.
That's fine,
guys.
Well, here's another question. Just because some companies like yourselves that tend to be able to dig into some detail about an infrastructure, you can end up surfacing quite interesting bugs or problems that people didn't know about in Kubernetes or whatever. Have you surfaced anything like that yet? That you saw a trend that kept recurring, and this, something's not quite right here, and it was actually being a problem that you've managed to help people identify, or not yet?
So I think in many bigger corporations, it's still early days with containers and container orchestrators. They often have like technology islands running with some projects running on containers already. And sometimes we see that they have different strategies internally, even for the same technology. So like in Kubernetes, if they run one big cluster or a multi-cluster strategy or so. But we haven't seen anything that's like that we see at all customers as like a recurring technical problem.
You know, I don't sort of I wonder, because I think especially with something like Kubernetes, I think a lot of people are still learning how to actually use it properly, and there may be errors in documentation or setup that everyone's following and everyone's getting the same problem. And you can actually sort of logging tools and monitoring tools can help actually kind of say, well, This is not a problem with an application or something. There's actually a problem somewhere deeper. That
yeah, I think funnily enough, it's mostly kind of a cultural situation, because the developer role is changing within the Kubernetes world. There's definitely more responsibility kind of along the whole chain suddenly, and that's something that we've heard, or especially I've heard speaking to a lot of people, that cultural shift is definitely more of a challenge, I would say, for companies who have, you know, traditionally more developers who are just used to the way things used to be. They ask for resources on the IT and from the IT guys, kind of from the whatever, the SysOps guys. They give them the resources and then they go and develop something and then it's production's problem, kind of thing. Whereas in kind of the more modern stack, that whole responsibility chain is much longer.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of a cultural challenge, and that's something that Replex can definitely help with. I mean, as we mentioned, with the kind of gamification of the dashboard, which was cool to see. I mean, it was good fun. It kind of, you know, helped especially the engineers to kind of get into a competitive mood,
definitely
help each other, and it was a huge saving on that.
I think actually cloud computing and a bunch of other things have really actually made applications become less efficient, because developers are, well, yeah, doesn't matter, we'll just chuck more computers
just in case.
We've seen a lot of problems recently of applications.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you some official figures, I mean, the recent report that came out of the state of the cloud was $60 billion worldwide being spend on resources that aren't being used.
I like, actually, this is an interesting sort of pitch perspective you have. Instead of this is a potential kind of monetization market, it's like this is a potential market where we can save people all this money. It's like, it's kind of a different perspective.
And that money's definitely going up. Yeah. So with the 2015 one was $57.8 billion, and it's up now to 60 and a bit. Yeah. So it's definitely going up. Well, with the cloud adoption, I'm assuming that's kind of proportional.
What could you spend that money on instead? Dinners.
Just a few
dinners.
A few extra office parties.
And that was Replex. For previous episodes and show notes, go to gearsmammal.com/podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, please rate us, review us, please support the show through donations or buying merchandise or signing up to our mailing list at gregariousmammal.com/support. Thank you very much.